Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm kicking off today's daily editorials with an update from Exelon Resources, traded on the TSX under the symbol EXN, and on the NYSE also under the symbol EXN. Chatting with the president and CEO, Brendan Cahill. Now, Brendan, a few news releases to follow up on. I want to start off with the news on March 17th, and it was the 2020 annual and fourth quarter results. Looking at Q4 of 2020 compared to Q4 of 2019, you saw improvements pretty much in every key category. Revenues increased by 41%. Gross profit also improved. Silver production increased by 37%. And all-in sustaining costs per silver ounce decreased 21%. Let's go through some of these numbers in particular, starting off with the all-in sustaining costs down to $21.19 per silver ounce payable. Brendan, let's talk about that. Where's some more room for improvement here? It was a very good improvement from Q4 2019, but I understand there's still some room to bring this number lower.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a number of factors in there that are kind of interesting to work through. $21 all-in sustaining costs, not happy with that. Lots of room to improve from where we are right now. But the improvements that we're seeing are really a product of the changes that we made at the mine in Q2 and Q3 of 2020. Very difficult year, but we made some hard decisions and kind of started to reduce costs pretty significantly, both in terms of our shift scheduling underground, the offtake arrangements we had on zinc during the year, changing the mining method, and then switching to a private electricity provider. But, going forward, where we see real room for improvement, 2020 was a year where finally we saw good silver prices, right? Silver going through $20, hitting a high of almost $30, and it was a time to catch up on some CapEx. So that was, I think, a big chunk of the all-in sustaining costs in 2020 and then in Q4 as well. We did a new tailings dam raise, world-class raise, very, very high-quality build there, something that was necessary and timely, but sets us up for the next 2 years. We won't need another tailings dam raise for quite some time. So that's kind of a one-time charge. Also, some key dewatering infrastructure installed in Q3 and Q4. The biggest part of that all-in sustaining cost, from my perspective, though, is treatment charges. So we produce a lead-silver concentrate and a zinc concentrate. And when you sell those to smelters, they charge you to treat that into metals. So those treatment charges were about $8 million or so in 2020 versus about $3 million or so in 2019. So big, very big increase there. We did see some shifting in the market kind of in the middle of the year in 2020. And in 2021, we've already renegotiated our lead offtake agreements, should see good savings there. And then kind of, keeping an eye on opportunities to reduce the zinc charges going forward as well. $5 million in increased charges, that's on top of our net revenue, or it's basically right off of our gross revenue and goes directly to your costs and your all-in sustaining costs. So the more we can do to reduce those going forward, it really does have a pretty significant impact on your all-in sustaining cost. It's kind of frustrating because with all the changes we've made and improvements we've made, this thing is really not in our control, short of negotiating as hard as we can on the global market. So, in terms of reduced CapEx going forward to some degree, and then opportunities to reduce treatment charges, I think very good opportunities to reduce that all-in sustaining cost going forward.
So, Brendan, just a quick question about those treatment charges. It wasn't just extra charges to you, right? It was extra charges across the board for the sector.
Yeah, exactly. So in 2018, charges were incredibly low. And then because of various global changes in terms of the economy and in terms of some environmental regulations that came down in China, basically they started to be a shortage of smelter supply. With fewer smelters to process zinc concentrate, the treatment charges started to go up very, very precipitously. That impacted everybody. It's something that the world is working through right now. But certainly with all of the stimulus money that's going into the economies globally, the need for zinc continues to increase. And we think we'll see a sustained lowering of those treatment charges going forward for quite some time.
Quick question then regarding this quarter. We have seen energy prices significantly higher than where we saw them really last year. How is that going to impact some of the costs for at least this quarter's production?
Yeah, we will see some impact in this quarter because of increased energy costs, entirely related to the polar vortex that hit Texas and the American Southwest, you know, in mid-February. That really fed into Mexico and played a fair bit of havoc with energy supply and energy costs across northern Mexico. So it was a temporal hit, lasted about 2 weeks, but it will impact our cost profile in Q1 a little bit this year.
Okay, let's also talk about now silver production, the increase of 37%. It was the strongest quarter since back in 2014. What led to this increase? Was it higher grade? Was it more throughput? What insights can you give us here?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of higher productivity and more tons, and then also just better workmanship, you know, more effective mining methods, and really having some good teams on the ground, you know, after the changes that we made in Q2 and early Q3 of this year. So tonnage was up to 22,000 tons, which was a record, or tied the record that we set in Q3 for tons out of the operation. And then, you know, grades were quite good at over 500 gram per ton silver. So you combine those two factors, and that was really the result. You know, when we look back at Q2 2014, far less tonnage, just a higher grade part of the mine. So from a productivity perspective, this was far and away the best two quarters, best H2 in the mine's history.
So what about the overall cash generated by operations? I've heard you on other interviews and even talking with us, the whole strategy is to use that cash flow from operations to fund the aggressive drilling that's also going on, the exploration programs. What are some of the financial metrics around the actual cash generated from these operations?
Yeah, so I mean, Platosa is a small mine, right? It's 2 million silver equivalent ounces a year, maybe 2.5 million. Obviously, last year with Q2, no production because of the suspension in Mexico, it was a little bit lower than that. But what it does, it generates cash that we use to cover our expenses and focus on exploration elsewhere. So when you look at, you know, we did $26 million in revenue, production costs of just under $20 million. So it's generating over $6 million in cash that we can use for, whether it's CapEx, G&A, or most importantly, exploration. And that's really the way that we want to look at it this. So when we focus on, you know, lower CapEx going forward to some degree, and then trying to significantly reduce treatment charges, that just generates more cash for us to put towards our exploration efforts. And, you know, I think one of the key exploration efforts we have right now is trying to grow the resource. And our underground drilling and our surface drilling around Platosa has been very effective and successful over the past year, continuing to define tons ahead of us to mine, and potentially, you know, increasing the mine life at Platosa with some more work, quite significantly from where we are today.
Okay, before we get into the exploration, give us a little insights on how the operations have been running this year so far. Are there any shocks that people should be expecting, or just give us a general recap then, please?
Yeah, I mean, I think the energy issue in mid-February was pretty bumpy. That was a difficult couple weeks. You know, not as smooth a start to the year as we would have liked with that issue. Looking out for the rest of the year, I think it's going to be quite good after we get through this Q1.
Okay, now into the exploration aspect. February 25th, there was a news release that outlined some recent drill results from Platosa's, and it's the best results that you guys have seen in a couple of years. The headline number, little over 1,400 grams per ton silver equivalent over almost 9 meters. That width is what really sticks out to me. Give us some more insights on these drill results, please.
Yeah, the cool thing about that is you know, 9 meters of a very high-grade silver equivalent. You know, we've got infrastructure that can be there within, you know, less than a year. So that's the, you know, all the development's done, the operation is humming along. It's one of the cool things about these results that come out of Platosa. They're all kind of very near-term mineable and all accretive to the mine life and the resource itself. You know, these results, we started putting them out from, you know, January or February 1st, a couple results in February. We hadn't really been doing a lot of underground drilling since late 2018. We had some results out in January 2019, and now we're finally getting back to really focusing on this underground drilling. And as before, it just continues to pay off. Another result out in on February 1st, you know, 1,100 grams silver equivalent over 4.2 meters. So we've defined kind of an area of the deposit that's was never drilled from surface very effectively. It's more of a vertical part of the system. Most of the historical drilling was vertical holes from surface. Trying to drill something that's vertical with vertical holes is really just luck versus science. But now with the underground infrastructure in place, we can drill that more effectively and kind of start to infill that and potentially add a lot of tons to the resource. When we look further afield, though, this is all structurally connected to a target that we have about 250 meters outside the bounds of the deposit that we call 1020, where we're starting to see some massive sulfides in drilling from surface. So that kind of step out, you know, 250 meters from the deposit, the entire footprint of Platosa is only 600 by 700 meters. So a 250 meter step out, pretty significant. And if we can drill effectively from surface to find something and then start drilling that from underground, it really, really kind of charts a new, longer path forward for the deposit itself.
So is that where the drilling's focused right now? Stepping out along surface and then looking to go underground?
Yeah, that's one part of our strategy, and that's the grow Platosa part of our strategy. The other parts are, you know, find more Platosas and then find the source of Platosa. And on the more Platosa side, we're also drilling out at a target called Jaboncillo, which is 11 kilometers to the northwest. And there we've hit Gossan's, you know, formerly galena sphalerite sulfide parts of the system that are now being oxidized. We hit those back in 2019. And now we're following up looking for the sulfide part of the system kind of at depth in the valley in a setting actually that's very similar to where Platosa is. And that's an ongoing program right now as well. And then in terms of finding the source of Platosa, that's a target called PDN. It's about 2 miles north of the mine, associated with the Rincon discovery we made in 2012, 2013, you know, 55 meters at 280 grams silver equivalent, over seven meters at around 1,400 silver equivalent, that's never really been followed up on. And now we're drilling a big geophysical anomaly, looking for a gold copper skarn really on that target. So lots going on around Platosa, tons of exploration this year.
How many rigs do you guys have on the ground right now?
I think we have two on surface and three or four underground at the moment.
Okay. And again, this is all being funded by the cash flow from operations?
That's exactly it. Yep.
Okay. One other news release that we should quickly touch on is the doubling of the land package at Silver City. Now, give us an update on the Silver City project and the work, or first and foremost, the strategy behind doubling this land package.
Yeah, so when we got to Silver City kind of in July of 2019 and saw this opportunity, it really was, you know, a huge area, 160 square kilometers at the time, that had been mined for hundreds of years. No modern day exploration, really because of the forgetfulness of history, right? You know, Germany moving off the silver standard in 1873, the wars, and then, you know, World War I and World War II, Saxony being part of East Germany. So really precious metals were not the focus of mining, which went on until the, you know, 60s and 70s in this part of the world. And then part of, you know, after German reunification, Germany relied on the world to provide the metals, and Germany made the cars and fridges and stoves and everything else, right? But that's changing now with the breakdown in supply chains and the like. So, and also sustainability, you know, farm to table for metals as well, where if your inputs travel shorter distance, that's a more sustainable form of production. I think that's a key focus in Europe these days. So when we got on the ground at Silver City originally, you know, we permitted the drilling program very efficiently. We got on the ground. There was curiosity about the drill rig, but lots of interest and acceptance. We started hitting this big epithermal system over 12 kilometers, beautiful silver species, high-grade silver results and discoveries. So we confirmed the thesis that, you know, this area is not done. Hundreds of years of mining, no modern-day exploration. There's more to be found. So with the relationships that we developed in Saxony and around Freiburg and the Braunsdorf license, which is Silver City, we realized that there was other areas that also had historical, very high-grade silver production that, you know, were worth further exploration. And that was really the genesis of deciding to pick up some of this ground and add it to our ground position, double the size of the Silver City project. And we'll start with a very slow technical approach, you know, prospecting geochem, geophysics, to identify areas around these old mines that are ready for some drilling.
When do you expect to then be drilling at the Silver City's project?
So Silver City, we aim to be drilling there, you know, in the next couple months. We're just going through the drill permit right now. So that's just working through that at the moment. On the new concessions, we won't be drilling there this year. It'll be, you know, more grassroots and, you know, geochem, geophysics, prepping for advancing those projects next year. I'd say we'll be doing a fair bit of work this year, but, you know, drilling won't be this year on those new additions to the project.
Okay, Brendan, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for this pretty comprehensive update. I will post a link below this interview to the news section on the Exelon website so everyone can follow along with the different news releases we discussed. And if you have any follow-up questions regarding anything going on at Exelon, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. Brendan, I appreciate the update. We'll chat again soon. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Corey.